Everybody, Jimmy Warren here. Welcome to a brand new episode of Guitar Talk. I'm pre-recorded this about a week or so ago because I knew that I was going to be out of the picture for a few days, but I wanted to make sure that I introed my guest today in a positive way, because my guest is Billy Crane. And if you do your research and your history, and you especially look into the whole Southern rock world and songwriting world, you're going to find out that Billy Crane's a name that if you don't know, you should know. He's been around the block a million times, and he has shared the stage with, you know, Charlie Daniels and the Allman Brothers and a lot of great people. And extremely talented guy. He's got a project where he's raising money to help veterans, which, you know, if you know me, you know I am all for. So this is a really good interview. It's a very interesting person, a great guitar player, great songwriter, written some hits over the years that if you go and you go down that rabbit hole, man, you're going to find them. There's going to be a lot of good stuff there for you, and I hope that you do that, because Billy Crane's somebody you should know. So do yourself a favor, sit down, put your feet up, get a nice cool beverage, and enjoy this conversation with the one and only Billy Crane right here on Guitar Talk.
You there?
I'm here, Billy. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you, Jimmy?
I'm good, man. It's a pleasure to meet you.
You too, my friend.
You know, when Steve told me about your project, I was like, damn, we got to talk about this. You know, I'm a part of Guitars for Vets, which helps veterans. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a topic that's near and dear to me. So, I thought it would be good for us to chat about what you're doing and the awareness you're trying to bring and so forth. But if we can, I sure love to talk a little bit about you and your playing and your history, and because, oh my God, you got a really deep, rich history.
Oh, absolutely, man. I've been doing this a long, long time. My brother and I grew up together. First, I want to tell you something. Are we on yet?
Yeah. Oh yeah. We're always on.
Good, good. I wanted to give you a huge plug, man, for your last single you put out, Transcending Time.
Yeah.
Man, what a great song. What was so cool about it? It's shades of early Carlos Santana. You had that tone, and you had some of those runs, man. I was sitting there going, this sounds like Carlos. It was so good.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you for listening. You're the fourth person to listen to it.
Oh, that's not true. Yeah, a lot of followers, man. But
that's very kind. I appreciate it. I called it my David Gilmour lawsuit song because I thought it was really reminiscent. I'm a huge Gilmour fan, so I figured, you know, I got to let out my inner Gilmour on a tune, because I do it live, but I don't ever do it on my recordings. And so
I thought it was actually really cool. So
I appreciate that, man. Very, very much. But you know what? This isn't about me. This is about you. And, let's go back, because you and your brother, you know, as I said before, have a really deep history, especially connection to, you know, what would be considered the Southern rock guys, you know, with the Allman Brothers and so forth like that, you know. So I'm curious, you know, what was it like growing up in your household? Was there a lot of music? Was there a huge influence of that?
There was a lot of music. My mother was a trained pianist, concert pianist. And my dad, he was a tinker, but he played a mean boogie woogie. Yeah. And he was always playing. I've got my parents' Steinway sitting in my studio next to me. It's 107 years old that they would play on all the time. And back then we had, the famed WLAC with John R. and Hossman. Were playing all those R&B records in the late 50s and early 60s. And they were always on the radio in our house. So we grew up listening to Ray Charles and, Chuck Berry and, I can't, my mind goes, but all the really early artists, B.B. King, it just come along. And so my brother, he picked up guitar, I think, in 61. He was 10 then, and I was 7, and I kept kind of watching him. And he, one day he wasn't in the house, and I picked up his acoustic, and I went and I started learning and playing, and I broke a string on it. And I thought, if you broke a string, you broke a guitar. So I went and hid under my mother's bed for 3 hours, knew my brother was going to come home and beat my ass. And he let me stay under there for a while. He finally said, "Hey, Billy, come on out. Come here. I'll show you how to change a string." And he started showing me some chords. So him and I grew up, you know, in that whole 60s era through the British invasion when the Beatles hit and everything. We were always in bands. I actually played banjo for a while in a one third grade talent show playing Tijuana Jail by the Kingston Trio. So, and we kind of followed that progression as we got into our teens. The Almond Joys then were coming into Tennessee and playing driveway combo gigs, they were called, and stuff, and playing around. And I got to see them a few times. And then the next time they came back around was in 69 when they were the Allman Brothers Band. And we got to see Dwayne and Greg many, many a times. And I got, matter of fact, one of Dwayne's slide bottles right here, his Corsican bottles that Sky, a Red Dog, who was one of their original crew members, gave to Roger Campbell, who was Charlie Daniels' guitar tech. And Roger and I are good friends, and he gave me this. I don't take it anywhere.
Yeah.
But it's got the mojo to it. But we kind of, you know, followed those guys around, and we had a band called the Flat Creek Band that played all over the South and had a pretty strong following. And then that fell apart, and Tommy had gone off at that point in 75 to play with the Charlie Daniels Band. Right. And he was there for 13 years playing with Charlie. And I, in 78, went to play with the Henry Paul Band, where Henry had come out of the Outlaws when he left the Outlaws, and we had a deal on Atlantic Records. And that's kind of where our whole path started into this other rock journey.
That's really cool. I knew Charlie. Charlie was a great guy. I absolutely love Charlie Daniels. You know?
Did you?
Yeah, I knew Charlie. Yeah,
I know you're a huge blues fan. Did you get to hear the last CD he made was called The Boll Weevils, and it was me and Charlie Hayward, his drummer, and James Stroud, you know, session drummer from Nashville.
Right.
And it's really good, and it's called Songs in the Key of E, and every song is in the key of E, but they're all different. They're Charlie songs. I played all the slide on it, and it's a really, really interesting record. You got to check it out sometime.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. I think I'll tell you how long it's been since I spent any real time with Charlie was when he had came out with the Doing It Dylan Style album.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Which I absolutely loved. And it was at that point, and I had known Charlie for a handful of years prior to that. And I never knew that Charlie played with Bob Dylan and was such a huge Bob Dylan fan. And so, but anyway, you know, that musical background for you guys, I mean, just how cool is it though, to grow up with somebody and have somebody, you know, a brother or whatever, you know, a musical partner, you know, that you can go on that journey with. And then eventually, you know, both of you go on to have various degrees of success with, you know, some just really talented people. That had to be really, you know, not only fun and amazing, but it had to be extremely memorable.
You know, Tommy was a great role model for me. He took me on really when I was in high school, and he was already in college and playing with horn bands and various bands and stuff, and he kind of took me under his wing. And it had its good points, good bad points, because I was hanging out with guys 3 and 4 years older than me in the 60s, and there was a lot of things going on that a kid should be. But he taught me, you know, how to play, taught me, and we sat up in our bedrooms for hours learning these Allman riffs and learning how Dwayne and Dickey did it. And he taught me how to treat people on tour, on the road, Tommy had respect for everybody and treated everybody equally and kindly. You know, there was no stars thing about him. He was just, I mean, he was a star, a bright shining star, but he was such a great guy. I mean, losing him in 2011 was, but his legend still lives on. I've got his gold top.
Oh yeah.
Remember he used to play on Devil Went Down to Georgia, man.
Oh wow.
Got the all green. He had that sweat that would just turn everything green.
Yeah. Wow.
But
what a great memory that, you know.
It is. You know what? He left me all his guitars. I've actually in my will have them going back to his daughter. So they'll stay in his family. But the funny thing about Tommy is about 90% of the stuff didn't work, but it all needs some kind of work here and there. And he was having him. I mean, he drove me to different heights. He had that kind of personality that Dwayne and Dickey both had. That you know, Dwayne and Dickey, when they would get on the stage with Allman Brothers Band, could drive that band, you know, mm-hmm. the dynamics of it and bring it down. They know how to do it. And Tommy knew how to do that really well. And Charlie Hayward the bass player from CDB always talks about that. Yeah. And I got some of that, but man, Tommy was an incredible leader. And
yeah. Apart from, you know, the aspects of performance and, you know, the opportunities you have, I mean, you've got another side to you that a lot of people don't get to experience, and that's the songwriter side, right? I mean, you've had real success in, you know, in writing songs. And I know from my own standpoint, I hate writing songs. I can't do it very well. I've never been able to do it well, probably because I never spent time with it, because I know it takes time. I'm typically just a hacker on the guitar as it goes, but to sit down and actually write a really good song. And so to have the accomplishments that you've had, because you've written songs and co-written songs for a lot of great people that have gone on to do really well.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you about what you're saying about yourself, because you are a pretty good songwriter. I've heard your songs, and you've written some good stuff, and you're a great player. And I started writing back in high school. My first song was Schoolhouse Blues. I wanted out of school so bad, man, ever since I'd seen the Beatles in Hard Day's Night, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to girls to chase me down the street and to take drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
I didn't know that in the third grade, but I wanted girls to chase me down the street, you know? And so when I got in high school, you know, I heard, you know, because the Allman Brothers Band were writing their own songs and all these acts out there, from the British Invasion, were writing their own songs. And I started tinkering with her and writing and continued to write. And as I came into the Henry Paul Band, I'd already had a pretty good catalog and wrote all most of the stuff that co-wrote with Henry on the 4 Henry Paul Band records. And then I did a 10-year period with Bellamy Brothers, and I had written a top 5 single for them that really got my career started. And I moved back from Florida to Nashville and started writing here for different companies. And biggest break I had was in 1989. Remember the band Poco, Rusty Young's band?
Yeah.
had reformed and put a single out and a song that myself and a fellow named Ron Gilbo, that lives here in town, his father was Gib Gilbo, who was in the Flying Burrito Brothers. We wrote a song called Call It Love that went on, and then it went number one all around the world. It was a big break.
That's really cool. That's got to feel good. Now is songwriting today, would you say that songwriting today is looked at or treated differently than it was back in those times? Because, you know, I've always been under the impression, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you write the songs, well, you're the guy who's really going to end up making the money. But it seems like nowadays that's not necessarily the case.
It's terrible now because you got the beats guy, you know, that's come in that does the beats. I think you're running an average between 5 and 6 writers on a song now. Hmm. And then, okay, so you got a song split up 6 ways. You get that on the Spotify. Spotify, the songwriter makes the least amount of money anybody. I think you get 0.00065 of a cent.
Yeah.
For each stream. So, I mean, there's, you know, when they come to Nashville over at BMI, the performing arts, whatever it is, they will tell you, make sure and have a day job. Because, you know, in my day when I was writing, we got pretty good sizable draws. Not now.
Yeah.
And it's a different beast, you know, what they're writing now. They're writing these if you hear the melodies, they're all so close and so same to each other with the same cadence. Mm-hmm. It's not like it used to be. It used to be really be from the heart. Now it's all about the numbers. Stop that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If you go back and, you know, and you listen to music, I'm going to say from like the 60s through like maybe, you know, 80, 81, and that there was such a huge variety of songs that were being written, you know. I mean, there was so much going on. And now, just like you said, it seems like if you listen to country music, okay, you know, country music, I've that's never really been my world. But as far as I know, and the people that I know that are in it, I mean, it's like you're going down one path. And if you don't go down that path, well, then, you know, you're not going to have any success or get any attention and so forth. And, you know, the same things kind of happened in rock. And even though it feels like rock's done full circle to the point to where now, in my opinion, from somebody that manages bands and owns a small record label, you know, to me, I feel like there's some really good emerging, you know, rock bands out there in that, but they just don't, you know, it's so hard for them to push through and get through the noise because, you know, the Coldplays and the U2s and the Ed Sheerans and the John Mayers and stuff like, I mean, how do they break through all that? But there are some really good bands. And I think when it comes to like the Americana root stuff, there's a lot of really good people out there.
Great stuff, you know, out there.
Yeah. You know, and them guys being able to break through to have the opportunities like somebody like yourself had back in your time. I mean, it's even in my time in the early, I remember I started in the late 80s. And I played with all the blues guys in Chicago, Otis Rush, Junior Wells, Buddy Guy, Sun Seals. I mean, you name it. I played with all of them, but you couldn't do that now. Even if they were alive, you couldn't do that now.
No, not at all. No. It's I mean, we all know it's a whole different ball game out there. You know, the big three labels control Spotify, they control everything. And it's do it yourself. Thing. But it's kind of good too, because you can make some serious money, you know, doing these smaller things. Even though you're putting out your own records, shoot, you sell 10,000 records, you got a good chunk of change in your pocket. Right. And but it's, you know, it's tough. And there are some great bands out there. I tell you what, there's a band, Alter Bridge. I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
Man, somebody turned on them recently. Wow, what a great band.
Yeah, Miles Kennedy is a great singer, and I think they got Mark Tremonti plays guitar. Yeah,
Tremonti's on there.
And in my opinion, it's like I don't know if you've heard any of Miles' original stuff, because he's done his own albums and stuff like that. But you know, it's not like Alter Bridge. It's more, I don't know what it is, but it's just really great songs. He writes really, really great songs. So what is today like for you? I mean, I know that you've got this new song, that you're promoting for your organization that helps veterans with PTSD. Can you tell people what the name of the song is and what the organization is and what the purpose, what you're trying to accomplish?
It's the song is called Something Worth Fighting For.
Right.
And what happened was, and by the way, I knew that about your organization too, man. And mm-hmm. thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you is all I can say, is mm-hmm. because you know these men and women, they need it. 6 years ago, I got a call from a guy named Al Jarvis down in Chattanooga. They have a thing called SoundCore down there, and they list all the musicians that have ever played at River Stages, and I had played the River Stages with the Outlaws back in 2009. And he looked me up, and he saw songwriter and all my history and everything. And he said, I'm going to call this guy and see if he'd be interested in coming down and writing. And he called me and said, would you want to become a therapeutic songwriter? And I didn't know what it was at the time, but mm-hmm. I did. I went down to Chattanooga, and I've been going down there every other week now for 6 years. And what we'll do is we have a group of veterans that come in. We've got some experienced ones that come every week, and then every week we try to bring a new one in. A lot of them can't tell their story. You know, they've been through you've heard their stories and what they've been through. They can't explain their feelings. They're just, I mean, broken, and nobody understand them. And if we can get them to tell this story, we'll write a song, whatever they want to write it, whether it's about what they've been through or a best friend or somebody in their family, we'll write a song around it, and we'll go record it and put it. And then we finish up, do a whole CD and put that out. And it's got this amazing healing effect. I mean, I've watched men and women go from, good example is my friend Roger. Hadn't left his house. He was a Vietnam vet in years. He would not leave the house, and now he comes every week, and he's president of the board down there. And it has helped these men and women. And I've broken off from, I was working with an organization called Freedom Sings USA, and I have a company now called Rogue Warrior Music. That's here out of the Nashville area. And I'm partnering with David Corlew, who is runs Charlie Daniels' Journey Home Project, which is a sizable project. Now, at some point, I'm going to break off probably from him. We will stay. He's going to be an advisor on my board, but I'm going to solely have a company where 100% of the proceeds are going to go to the veterans. Mm-hmm. The single we're putting out, I put this out of my money out of my own pocket. I didn't want to go, you know, having to get money from here and there and have to pay people back. This is something I wanted to give to the veterans. So every penny that comes in is going to go to them. It will help. We're going to help them go to treatment and get alcohol and drug treatment if they need it, if they need housing, any way we can to help. You know as well as I do, you see a lot of these guys come in with substance abuse problems. I will tell you, I'm 30 years sober now, I had terrible drug and alcohol problems in back in the day, and during the Southern Rock tours with the Almonds and stuff, and God got me clean and sober, and I want to give that gift to these veterans too, because if you can get them cleaned up, man, you can really, you know, God can do amazing things with them.
Yeah. It's a horrible thing that goes on in our country. You know, in my opinion, the way these guys are treated and taken care of. And, you know, I personally served in the military. My dad served, both my grandfathers served, all my uncles served. I mean, I come from a long line of military service, and, you know, what people before me, because I mean, for me, it was cushy, but for the people before me, you know, I think a lot of people, and even after, I mean, the guys from Afghanistan and, you know, in, you know, the new wars that have taken place, the things that they have gone through is just absolutely horrific, and how they've just been kind of pushed aside. And so, you know, I absolutely applaud you, you know, for your devotion into investing into them, because that's exactly what those guys need. They need somebody to invest in them and let them know that they have value, and what they did, and that the sacrifice was really memorable to us, and we really value that. And man, so where can people, is the song, I know I watched it on YouTube. I know it's on YouTube, and that, but it, is it on all the streaming services as well?
It's on iTunes and Amazon, all Spotify, all the streaming services.
Right.
They can get it. They'll be able to get it on it's on billycrane.com in a week, on my website. And they can pick it up pretty much anywhere. And we'll have a new a whole CD coming out pretty soon called Hey America from the Chattanooga group. Then I'm going to start with my new group in the Nashville area in February. You live in Nashville some, right?
I've got an office in Hermitage.
Ah.
I was going to move to Nashville, and then some things changed and I ended up staying up by Chicago, but I have a remote office down there that I sometimes use.
Well, thank you for serving our country, because
thank you.
You know, the sad thing is they come home, they're called baby killers, they're cursed at, you know, their families don't understand them. I know my friend Lee he's got PTSD, does so bad. He has to have pillows between him and his wife at night, because sometimes a car muffler goes off, or a gunshot or something, and it'll set him right off. And the classic example too, also, he's on 26 different drugs.
Wow.
He needs a back surgery. And you know how it is, what you got to go through in the VA to get a surgery. You have to actually go to court.
Yeah.
He's been in court for 6 years trying to get this surgery, and they keep turning him down. And it's so sad, you know. That wouldn't happen to any normal American, you know. Right. But yet for these men and women who have gone out there and given their lives so we can have a better life. You know, can't even get the, you know, the small, the easiest of services. Their medical services are but 30 years behind. And the suicide rate now, it was 22 a day. It's 25 a day from what I'm hearing behind the scenes. It's really 45 a day. So, you know, men and women. So this is a really important project that, and I'm hopefully going to put together a tour together with Artemis Pyle. And Artemis does a whole lot for the servicemen and women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great. I know in the past I've put on shows with past guests from my podcast in order to raise awareness and money for guitars for vets. And I host a guitar show, a buy, sell, trade type show. And, you know, we raffle off a wide variety of guitar gear, you know, and try to raise as much money as we possibly can, you know, and take donations and stuff like that. Because, I mean, there's no end to the need that's out there, you know. PTSD has just devastated so many people like that. You know, I think the issue of homelessness too with veterans is another one. I mean, there's just so many battles that, you know, still have to be fought in that. And so for you to actively be a part of that, you know, to have overcome the issues you have in your own life and then to turn around and, you know, invest your life into somebody else or into somebody, you know, like that is, man, that's huge. I think that's what life's about, right? I mean, look, we get to go through life and enjoy the great guitars and the music and all that shared experience. But in the end, it's really about investing your life into the life of somebody else. You know, how can you help somebody else? How can you be there? I mean, I don't know about you, but I find more fulfillment in that than any other thing I do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what you're doing with Guitars for Vets, that's it. And when that comes around, please let me know, because I would love to donate. And I know if you ever need grants or anything, would definitely love to be a part of that and probably have some guitars around here that we could put in there.
Yeah. I don't run the organization. I'm just an ambassador for the organization. I'm a mouthpiece, you know. I try to just drive awareness. Their partnership is with Gibson. Gibson donates about 1,000 guitars a year to veterans. And then what they do is they give all these veterans, they spend time with them and they give them lessons and, you know, and stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yamaha was a part of it at one point too, but I think Gibson is the biggest sponsor, and they do a lot of big events. They did one in Nashville not that long ago at the Gibson Garage. Jared James Nichols, I think, performed at it along with a few others and stuff like that. You know, maybe there will come a time, maybe the two can merge for an event or something like that. Like maybe some big veteran thing or something that can bring awareness, you know, on a grander scale. That would be kind of cool.
It would be very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So can people also go to your website, or do you have something separate where they can go to just to donate if they just want to give to your cause?
Yeah, if they want to give, they can go to Charlie Daniels Journey Home Project. Charlie Daniels Journey Home Project. What that project is, it helps the vet make the transition from coming back from overseas and working their way back into society. They do put people through treatment and help in all the different ways. It's based out of Nashville, really, really strong program, really growing too. That's who I've been working a lot with now. David Corley was Charlie's manager for 50 years. You might have met David somewhere along the road. You know, Charlie was way into the veterans thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's weird. I used to host a regular radio show at one point, and I remember one time when I had Charlie on, I think the entire time he was on the show, he talked about veterans and the Second Amendment. That's all he talked about. You know, the whole time.
Get him away from the Second Amendment. I was like, Charlie, no politics.
He went on and on and on and on. You know, I didn't care. You know, I let him roll, because back then, you know, it wasn't like today. You know, today you have somebody, you know, I recently had Ted Nugent on my show, I like Ted Nugent a lot. I do. And he was one of them guitar players that when I was a kid, he's one of the guys that, you know, made me want to pick up the guitar and play. I mean, come on, Stranglehold. I mean, who wouldn't?
Oh, yeah,
It's so when I had him on my show, I announced it all over my social media. And of course, people started messaging me saying, well, if you're having, you know, him on the show, well, I'm never listening again. And, you know, all this kind of stuff. And when he came on the show, I never said anything to him or Linda prior to it about, do me a favor, let's just try to stay on the guitar. I never said a word because, you know, people that don't know Ted don't understand that he's really a cool, gracious guy.
Oh, he's the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah. You know, and he didn't say one word about anything political or, I mean, he did. He was in his, in his studio where he was shooting arrows at targets periodically while we were talking. But, you know, other than that, he stayed on point. But look at, we need some people like those guys that aren't afraid to say what needs to be said, you know. So
I mean, we got to have people that speak up for this country and speak up for Jesus Christ. I mean, you have Alice Cooper, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Man,
I've had to tell you, the two loudest shows I ever played was with Ted Nugent and Blackfoot back in back in the 80s.
I believe it.
Those were two loud bands, man.
I believe it. I was amazed to learn that Ted's tours were some of the most like profitable and biggest tours in the 70s. You know, I didn't realize when I started looking at who was opening for Ted, it was like the Aerosmiths and the AC/DCs are opening for Ted. And it's like, wow.
Everybody was opening for Ted, man.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a beast back then. You know, he was.
But he was really nice too. He was like, to me, he was always super nice when I'd see him with Volunteer Jam. And, him and the Skinner guys, I was real good friends with Alan Collins. So,
right.
That was a wild bunch there too.
I bet. Well, I tell you what, man, I've enjoyed chatting with you a lot, and I wish your project and your music and what you do in the future, you know, all the success in the world. And cool. I'm going to make sure that we post your links for your song and for your stuff across our social media and on our website and stuff like that, so that people know, are aware.
Well, Jimmy, I can't thank you enough for having me on here to do this. It means the world to me and also to a lot of veterans. And I hope that we get to cross paths someday and place. We'll write a song, dadgummit. I will make you write a song. We'll write a crazy one.
Yeah, well, next time I get through Nashville, I'll try and look you up. You know?
All right, man.
All right. It was good talking to you. You take care of yourself.
All right. Thank you, Jimmy.
All right. Mom. Bye-bye.
Well, everybody, I hope that you enjoyed this episode of Guitar Talk with Billy Crane. I want to thank Billy so much for participating. It was an absolute treat talking to him and getting to know him. I am so thankful to my friend Steve for, you know, recommending Billy to be on the show. And do yourself a favor, you know, go like, follow, share, support his veteran causes, which is tied in with Charlie Daniels. So something that's really important. And until next week, I'm Jimmy Warren. I'll see you right back here in Guitar Talk. Take care, y'all.